Welcome, everyone.
Okay, companionship in marriage. I regret that my companion is not here to fill in all the blanks and to assist, but I did go over it with her and tried to capture her wisdom on this particular splendid topic. I'd like to start to just kind of lay the land. You might know that the term love is in the Greek. There's three different words for it: eros, which is the romantic love; agape, which we commonly hear is the commitment love, sacrificial love; phileo is the friendship love. Romantic, I want; commitment, I will; and friendship, I like. And so this particular topic is going to be about the friendship part, okay? And I think there are probably other talks going on in this building right now that touch on some of those other ones, but we're going to just really focus in on this friendship phileo love, because it's a really special love. In fact, I talked to Caleb Beyer. Caleb has mentioned this to me before, that it's not uncommon when they see marriages start to drift, that the first thing to go is the friendship love. And so it's a bit of an indicator that a counselor would look at. And I think it kind of makes sense. There's other forces at play that keep the agape and the romantic going sometimes, but sometimes the friendship can drift. And so I think it warrants just some time spent as we consider each other and ourselves on friendship. What a special love that we have with our spouses, companionship and friendship. I mean, we are asked to agape all men, and we can. In fact, we're asked to agape and love our enemy. But I contend you'll probably never be a friend to your enemy. That's pretty hard to do, isn't it? To like them? I mean, all right, I'll love them, but like them is another story. So there is a uniqueness to friendship. There's a uniqueness to companionship, really, that we want to hit on and express and celebrate. So let's look at the problem statement. A feeling that your spouse isn't hearing you and doesn't want to understand would be a metric by which Caleb would be looking for and to assess this area of our marriage. An attitude of who cares. A feeling of being unable to please or meet the expectations of your spouse. A why try. A sense that your spouse is detached from you. A refusal to cope with what's really going wrong. That's your problem, not mine. I pulled these from a Family Life article, which I thought was pretty apt. So some people like to highlight, right? Yeah, as you read something, you highlight it. What of this problem statement might you highlight as you read through it? What brings it to the surface? What brings this concept to your awareness? So just shout it out there. We want to understand the problem to help us understand the solution. What would be some things you would highlight? If you're a highlighter and you look through there and say, that's really telling. What are some of those phrases or words? Your problem, not mine. Yeah, your problem, not mine. Why try? Detached. Why don't we open our booklets to page 32, that word list that has been referenced now a few times, and let's put that word list against some of these. What words here do you think fit well with this problem statement on this list on page 32? Just shout it out. Neglected, disconnected, defeated, isolated, rejected. What list are those in? Those are kind of in the lonely one. You know what's interesting? You know what's interesting? Is I'm not sure we pulled words out of the mad list so much. But sometimes we think that madness is what drives marriages to doom. And it's not the most telling thing. It's kind of that lonely list. And that's what the friendship love is about. Does that make sense? Because the mad list happens when people actually are engaged with one another. Does that make sense? They are facing one another. They are in a we relationship. And it's hard. And they're fighting about it. But when you are in a me relationship, now that's altogether a different situation. Does that make sense? And that's what companionship and phileo love is all about. And so it's really, really critical. And so I'm really delighted here to look into Genesis, because we learn very early in Genesis. We see companionship very early. We see it in his creation. So I just want to point out a few things. The image of God is in us, and it's very, very good. Listen to Genesis 1, 27. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. So he created us in his image, and in his image required us. He created us. There was our image was created and placed upon this earth in an us fashion, male and female. That's what was required to have the God image there. And when God's image, when he created God's image, I love this, and God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And we know that he said, after he created the land, he said it was good. And after he created the moon, he said it was good. After he created the animals, he said it was good. He was always placing his goodness on everything that he had made. But then we get to this point where he places his image. He steps back and he says, look what I just did. That's us. He said, this is very good. This is very good. And so here we have in Genesis 2, and the Lord God said, it's not good that man should be alone. I will make him a helpmeet for him. And out of the ground, the Lord God formed every beast of the field and every fowl of the air and brought them to Adam to see what he would call them. And whatsoever Adam called every living creature, that was the name thereof. And Adam gave names to all cattle and to the fowls of the air and to every beast of the field. But for Adam, there was not found a helpmeet for him. And the Lord God caused a deep sleep to fall upon Adam, and he slept, and he took one of his ribs, and he closed up the flesh instead thereof. And the rib which the Lord God had taken from man made he woman and brought her to the man. And Adam said, this is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man. Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother, shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. And they were both naked, the man and his wife, and were not ashamed. Now, this is a mysterious. There is so much packed into this paragraph, okay? And so much meaning and so much intention. And I just want to call out a few things. One, as we start at the very top, we see that God created us for a relationship. It's not good for man to be alone. There's a relationship need there that he has placed us with. And he brought Adam to understand this need. I find it interesting that verse 19, we go from, boy, it's not good for Adam to be alone. Hey, let's parade all these animals before Adam. For what purpose? For Adam to come to the understanding, as he gave them their names, that there's not one for him. You see how he was bringing Adam to this own awareness? I mean, God knew it in verse 18. Adam knew in verse 20, that he needed relationship. There was not one for him. And so there's a creation of a woman to meet that need of relationship. Wonderfully, God places Adam in sleep. He takes a rib. He creates a woman. And he then brings the woman to Adam. You know what's really special? And it's not... it's all in between the scriptures here. But there was a time where it was just God and Adam. We know that. But there was also a time when it was just God and the woman while Adam was sleeping. I wonder what that time looked like. when he formed Eve and he brought her up on her feet. I wonder what kind of interaction he had with Eve. And then he brings Eve to Adam. And so, and here Adam understands her. He looks and says, this is now bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. He understood the creation of Eve. Now, how is it that he understood the creation of Eve? Because he had just understood all the animals. That was his job. Does that make sense? I think Adam was an intelligent, he was insightful, he was thoughtful, he was like a platypus. This, I mean, look how the thing moves. Have you ever, this is, well, it's kind of like this and kind of like that, but I'm going to call it this. Does that make sense? I mean, just, he did this for thousands and thousands as they break. Now look at this thing. Oh, look at, and he started to classify them. I'm sure he had to say, well, that kind of looked like that other thing, but it's different and it's special in this way. And so when his wife is brought to him, he's like, how was she made? God, what happened while I was sleeping? I need to know some information here. And he places a name upon her that meets her description because she was fit. He saw how she was different. She saw how she was alike. And Adam understands her. That leads us then to marriage. It leads us to marriage and then to a no-shame relationship. No shame relationship. The narrative that it's in here is quite masterful that God was bringing these things about. And I would like just to point out that we have some uniqueness. There's uniqueness here. She is alike to me, yet different from me. There's uniqueness there. Adam was able to place his finger on it. There was uniqueness. And yet there was oneness. As they cleaved together, there was oneness, and then there was complete openness between them. I think these three words wonderfully, wonderfully articulate the relationship of the Trinity, I think you will find. Wonderful uniqueness, beautiful oneness, and complete openness. You see, Can you see now why God said, oh, look what we did when we created this? This is very good because it reflected him. But we also see this in this narrative. We also see this in this narrative, and that is there is a connection. There is a facing. As Adam went, a connection, Adam went from a me world to a we world. Do you see how that's in here? He went from a me world to a we world, and that came by way of connection, which then gave rise to a knowing of this person, this relationship, this creation that is fit for him. Not like all of the other animals that he named. This one was different. He knew it. He had looked at a lot of things. He understood what he was looking at, and he knew it. So he went from a me world to a we world and connected when they were brought together. He learned, knew her, and then cared for her and she for him in marriage. And I'm going to suggest that that is our template for companionship that we're going to walk through today. The template will be to connect with each other, to know one another, and to care for one another. And when we do so, we're just doing what God created way back before sin entered the world. We're following the same exact pattern, okay? Now, John Gottman is a real big name in marriage therapy and marriage research, okay? He's done tons of analysis on thousands and thousands of couples, and he quotes this. This is, I think, a very insightful quote. He says, happy marriages. So as he observed happy marriages, he said, happy marriages are based on a deep friendship And by this, I mean a mutual respect for and enjoyment of each other's company. These couples tend to know each other intimately. They are well-versed in each other's likes, dislikes, personality quirks, hopes, and dreams. They have an abiding regard for each other and express this fondness, not just in the big ways, but in the little ways, day in and day out. Okay, so let's do the highlighter activity again. If you were to highlight it through here, what would you highlight? What stands out to you? Deep friendship. Enjoying each other's company. Mutual respect. I'm sorry. Fondness. That's a great word, isn't it? So here's what I want you to notice, okay? Notice what, in all of his research, he has not concluded. He has not concluded happy marriages are those marriages that, you know, take two-week alone vacations on solitary islands where they ravish one another in love. Don't you think this fits the friendship side of the triangle? His conclusion on happy marriages is that special side of the triangle of companionship, of friendship. It is a we world. It's a we world. Okay, so we're going to connect, know, and care, all right? So as we look at connecting, knowing, and caring, we're going to go in that order because that was the order that Adam and Eve formed their companionship. First is in building companionship is turning towards your spouse, okay? See, there's a basic need that we all have a connection. There is a connectedness that we all, I just heard this metaphor and I really like it, you know? All of our phones all the time are trying to search for a connection, aren't they? Everywhere you go, your phone is like, oh man, I lost that connection. Where's the next one at? Where's the next one at? Searching, searching, searching. Bing. Hey, I'm all right. I'm okay. And such is the heart of man that he has built us with a searching, searching, searching. We always have a dial. And this is why this is such a critical one. Because when we have companionship and friendship in marriage, we've got the connection. Which means what? We're not searching anymore. Does that make sense? We're not searching anymore. Connection is broken, you will be searching. That's why it's so destructive. That's why it's so destructive. Okay? Fighting marriages are connected marriages. Isolated marriages, the search has gone on. So turn towards your spouse is huge. Number one, being connected. Number two is know, right? Be a student of your spouse because we all have a basic need to be known. To be known and to be loved. As some have said, I think it's terrific. We all have a basic need to be known and then to be loved for truly being known, right? Not for some facade, right? As Arlen mentioned with his neighbors in Bloomington, right? You kind of could be liked for really not who you were, but being liked and loved for who you really are. We all have that basic need. And then finally, sharing affection and appreciation of your spouse. We have a basic need then to be cared for, right? To be loved. Now, let's first start about turning towards. So now we're just going to provide a few talking points on what this looks like. Connecting, draw nigh to God, and he will draw nigh to you. You can see this searching, right? God has placed in our hearts a search for him, and we are to draw nigh to him. And really, so what we're speaking here of is making that connection, drawing nigh, not only to him, but also to our spouses. And so the first one I'm going to talk about is bids. Now, Caleb, 2 years ago at the marriage conference in Gridley, is anybody there in Gridley 2 years ago? All right, so you've heard this, okay? And it's an important concept, and catch the beauty of it, and so we'll just kind of unpack it briefly again. But this concept of bids is when we reach out for connection with our spouse. So I want you to consider these five bullets. These would be maybe what your spouse is saying with their search. If their search is grinding within them, they might be asking some of these five questions, right? It could be, pay attention to what I'm saying. Respond to simple requests. Help or work with me. Show interest or activity, excitement in my accomplishment. Answer my questions or requests for information. Now, I love how local and how basic bids are, right? Again, these are not extravagant. None of these will cost you a dime. You know, I learned early in my marriage, and I'm still learning it, but I did learn early in my marriage that when you find a cheap and easy way to please your wife, then do it. I had this conversation with a person who thought, you know, buying roses was silly or whatnot. And I had this conversation, I was talking to him, I was like, you don't understand how easy this is, okay? You're missing how easy this is, right? On your way home, you can stop by and it makes a huge difference, right? Why let this go when it's so easy? You know, there are harder battles to fight, right? And the same is true, I think, with these things. Answer them. You know what's helped since I learned about bids and Caleb helped me understand it at the marriage conference 2 years ago, is it's given Rebecca and I vocabulary. Vocabulary is powerful. Vocabulary basically encapsulates an idea. And so with a word, you cast an idea. Pretty powerful stuff. And so there will be times where Rebecca, you know, I'll give an example, might be doing the laundry and kind of grunting, and later reflect on that and say, honey, that was a bid, wasn't it? Yeah, it was a bid, right? So she wanted me to connect with, going back to, right, the feeling of, I'm irritated that I'm doing laundry right now. Does that make sense? And it's so easy to let that bid go. But now that we have the vocabulary, we can say, that was a bid. I'm sorry, I missed that bid. Or even preface it, honey, I'm going to make a bid. You know, it might be as simple as this. I was at the store, and I ran into a classmate. Now, the spouse has the option to say, or ignore, or say, no kidding, who was that? And what did you talk about? And all of those are very different, aren't they? Why? Because it's going from a me world to a we world. And my interaction at the grocery store matters to you because we live in a we world. That was my world, but it's not mine alone. It was our world. Does that make sense? That's the power of bids. So you do have a worksheet that's not intended to do now, and it's turned towards. It's the second page on the stapled. It's called Turn Towards. And this is simply meant to help you make bids, going from an alone world, me, we, share. So here are just some buckets you might think about. Interest. Make a bid for interest. I think such and such is cool too. We both think such and such is cool, right? That's a we world. We both like, right? So you might see your spouse enjoy something. It's like, you know what? I love that too. I like that, right? Or share amusement. I found something humorous today. We'll talk about humor in a bit. Share activity. You want to do something with me. That's a we world. Share a cause. You know what? That bothers me as well. I struggle with that too. I have a burden for that also. We go from parallel causes and parallel lives to joint causes, to joint passions. A we world, right? Share history. Honey, do you remember when? Fill in the blank, right? You've made memories together. Connect on those memories are awesome ways to show connection. I'm punching buttons as I'm talking up here. Sorry about that. Share ownership. What are we going to do about our, notice that, our? What are we going to do about our issue, right? And it could be something that, what are we going to do about our, you know, living room carpet? Because we live in a we world, and it's ours. Share hurts. Something made me sad. Share joys. Makes me happy. Share a prayer. What can we pray about? So anyway, those are not intended for you to tackle right now. Those are simply to launch bids, okay? So you might think about this, those. So there was a wife who woke up in the middle of the night and turns, and her husband's not in bed. She sees a light down the hallway, down in the basement. She goes down and sees him and eating some cereal there at the kitchen. He's crying. And she goes over and places her hand on his shoulder and says, "Honey, what's wrong?" And he puts his hand on her hand and says, "Sweetheart, do you remember when your dad caught me kissing you when we were 17? And he put his finger in my face and said, 'Marry her or go to jail.'" And she said, "Yeah." He said, I would have gotten out today." You know, we just connected with a laugh. Does that make sense? We just, in that moment, had a we experience. Does that make sense? Laughter is an awesome we experience. Now, a merry heart does good like a medicine, but a broken spirit drieth the bones. The contrast there is so clear. It was just really funny. The contrast between a merry heart and dry bones, right? And so let's talk about laugh. It's really interesting studies out there on laughter and what they're finding out. One thing is, I think, amazing is they've only discovered laughter among human beings. Isn't that interesting? Now, they've been trying to work on the primates and tickle and all kinds of things, but nothing conclusive at this point. What does that mean about God? What does that mean about his very good image bearers? That we chuckle. Isn't it amazing? You've been to different places in the world. It's funny when you can't even speak, but you laugh. It's the same. It's like this. There's the same humor threshold. Like, that's funny in America, and it's funny here too. We laugh about things. Laughter promotes bonding. You know, I just told a joke to get you a laugh, right? But actually, when they study laughter, most of it's not joke. Most of it is actually social. It's instigated. It's two people laughing together about something in common, right? So that's where laughter most arises in the natural. But it promotes bonding. You know it's contagious. You know it's contagious. You've been in those situations where you start to laugh and it becomes even more funny. It has that, and it bonds. It bonds people together. It's a healthy brain exercise. When they look at your brain while you're laughing, I mean, your logic is going on because it's like, oh, that's funny. Like, he would have gotten out. He's like kind of remorseful. It's like 20 years, right? And you're kind of working this through, and that was kind of a twist. So there's logic, but also there's emotion going on. There's physical going on. There's physical going on because your facial expressions, right? Your brain is lighting up. It's a healthy brain exercise. They also say that they've also seen that laughter increases tolerance of pain. Do you have painful things? We all do, don't we? And laughter is a pretty, it's very therapeutic, all right? Some other interesting things that they're kind of finding out. They find that women need laughing more, perhaps, than men, but men are more often the instigators of laughter. So there it is, guys. That's your charge. Make your girl laugh. Get her to smile. Get her to chuckle. That's what we do best, right? Maybe it's at our expense. Be a student, okay? Hosea, hear the word of the Lord, ye children of Israel, for the Lord has a controversy with the inhabitants of the land because there's no truth, nor mercy, nor knowledge of God in the land. Notice that God's decry through Hosea, one of his major themes to Hosea in his controversy, his problem, is that they didn't know God. They didn't know him. Now, isn't Hosea all about an adulterous nation? I mean, he married, you know, that's kind of like, no, Hosea is all about a people who didn't know God. They didn't know him. For I desired mercy, not sacrifice, the knowledge of God more than burnt offerings. Jesus actually quotes that twice in the New Testament. So know your spouse. You know, what stresses am I facing right now? Describe, I'm just curious, in those four bullets, okay, just take a moment silently to your own self. How many of those four bullets could you answer for your spouse? So your spouse is asking this. What stresses am I facing right now? Describe in detail what I did yesterday. What is one of my greatest fears? What is one of my favorite ways to be soothed? Just to get you thinking about knowledge. On your stapled sheet, you've got one for knowledge. It is be a student. It's called be a student there. And there's, I don't know, 15 or so questions, right, that are intended to launch that, right? And here's the thing, right? Even though, yeah, these change all the time, right? Stresses change, fears change, and so these questions are really always relevant, and there's certainly, it's not the limit of them, but they're intended for you to be as Adam was, so discerning of his wife that he unpacked her creation, he unpacked her making, he unpacked the reason for her, and he named her according to it. And he lived according to the truth of it. He knew her. And so we are encouraged to know one another. Share affection and appreciation. So now we're talking to care, okay? So here we got connect, know your spouse, care for your spouse. Song of Solomon's, you know, there's a lot of steamy things in Song of Solomon. Probably is more on the Eros side of things, right? There is a phrase that friendship falls in right there, but as you can tell, I cut a lot of other things out. This is my beloved, and this is my friend. That's great, though, isn't it? That's a part of it. This is my beloved, and this is my friend. You know, that's one thing, as I was asking and talking to Rebecca, she really kind of accented, is the importance of friendship. And she said, sometimes I think that, you know, people typically can treat their friends better than their spouses, right? We give our friends the benefit of the doubt. We are quick to criticize our spouse and not so quick to criticize our friends. We can cheer for our friends, and sometimes we don't cheer for our spouses, and we just don't treat one another like friends. And so I think this is an important point. And so here's just a few things to think about. When it comes to sharing affection, you've got other things, but use non-sexual touch, okay? Simply because we're talking about companionship here, but touch is important. And studies show that touch is important. And to hug one another, for example, and I know Caleb has said 12 or 15 second embrace makes a big difference. It makes a big difference in your brain. It makes a big difference in what's going on in your emotions. And to have non-sexual touch and connection. Because that would be a we world thing to do, isn't it? We also have just because affection, right? It could be a text. It could be a note. There are so many ways to reach out and touch one another for that search to be connected in our world, to do that, right? Rebecca and I have a silly little thing. We'll just do this, too. We'll just show each other, too, which means I want to and we can. And so then we'll kiss or we'll hug or we'll connect. Does that make sense? And it could be at dinner time, or it could be in some other place. But it's a concept of, it's a simple way to connect. We know what we mean. Three squeezes is I love you. Grab her hand, I love you. She knows what that means. Back of the neck, I love you. And she does it to me. It's discreet, it's appropriate. And it just is a point of connection, just because, right? Take your spouse's side. I think this is another example where friendship, right? We're quick to get on our friend's side, but not so quick to get on our spouse's side. Let me give you an example. And this, I think, really plays to Caleb's talk with emotions. Suppose your wife comes home, maybe was at work or something, and says, "Ugh, I was 5 minutes late, and my boss got mad. Today's been a terrible day." Now, we have an opportunity that moment to say, "Well, don't be late." And seriously, honey, you've got a problem with that. So I think you need to learn from this. Now, we do that more than what we care to admit, right? But the point is to be wise enough to know when to give that important advice and when she is giving a bid for connection. Does that make sense? And for you to be on her side to say, "Oh, I hate it when bosses are mad at me." You know what I mean? I hate it. Oh, because I do things like that too, you know? And all of a sudden now you're on her side in a we world. Now, it doesn't mean that we can't address lateness at some point in time, but being discerning about when we do that, to be able to understand when it's time for a lesson and when it's time for a connection. Those are different. And all of that, I think, plays out. So does your spouse feel like you're on her side, right, with whatever? Maybe it's a school PTA issue, right? Or it's a work issue. Be their fan. Share appreciation. A couple of points here. I'm proud of the way you this, or I'm attracted to your, I'm impressed that you fill in the blank. I like how you, can you answer these questions? All of these would be an opportunity and a way to express care for them. And very lastly here, it's the front sheet on your stapled handout. We're like throwing all kinds of words. This is like English 101 here. These are positive personality adjectives, all right? Positive personality adjectives, you know, because sometimes we need help seeing the beauty and the virtue of our spouse. And this list is intended to jog your memory, to jog your awareness, right? So anyway, who knows, guys? You might be called debonair or something like that. The activity is personally reflect on the positive attributes by considering some specific examples. Thank God for this trait in your spouse and show appreciation to your spouse for exhibiting this trait. So you can add that to your list of things you could possibly do. We are out of time, so let's just close with this comment. Jesus calls us what? You are my salt, but he also calls us, you are my friends. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? He has agaped us. But for him to like us, oh my goodness. Wow. He likes us. And he has called us friends. And we then exhibit that same friendship in this bond of marriage. So I hope that you can be encouraged with that.